This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Good afternoon, Ned.
Good afternoon, Aaron.
First of all, happy 20th anniversary. How does that feel?
You know, it's interesting. You think when you've owned a company, you've owned it forever, and yet if it's only the 20th anniversary, I started it when I was 44. You know, when you think about that, you know, I guess if somebody asked me, it would have been, oh yeah, I've owned it forever, and I really haven't. That was sort of middle age when it started. So I had to grow a lot in between then. So that was, it's been a really fun journey. But you know, when you buy properties, you can do it alone. And a lot of our clients do that. You basically work at home or you work in a small office. So to have a company with all these other facets to it, that was really outside of the scope for me for the first 15 years.
Wow. Yeah, it's hard to believe 20 years and then 10 years of the radio show this year. We have over 500 radio shows in the can.
That's interesting. That's another, that was a good idea of yours because it really forced me to study. You know, when I interview a lot of these people, they're a lot smarter than I am on their subject. And so what's neat is we have the history to all the way back to the crash. And so the opinions before the crash of people that were in the economist world, where I would ask them how they're seeing things, you know, it wasn't trying to trap anybody at all. It was just trying to get their opinion of how they drew conclusions that things were okay.
Yeah.
And that was, it's been a really interesting journey and a wide variety of people and opinions. So it's been fun.
Yeah. So this is your 10th timing report, isn't it?
It is. You know, it's interesting. The first one was 8 years in length. So, you know, the idea of ever doing 10, you wouldn't look at the math and think, okay, well, that's likely. But the first one was an 8-year journey. And then when it turned out to be pretty accurate and we started doing them a little bit more often because there were smaller chunks to consider when we did the countdown, we knew that would be a short term report till we got to the crash. And when the crash happened and then grew in intensity, we had category 5, which was like, oh my gosh, this is going to get really bad.
Yeah.
So the reports that I really, I guess, am most proud of are the cycle changes. So the California countdown, I'm sorry, the California comeback, the crash, and even the one in 2012, all interfold. Those were really good directional get in or get out, and they made people, including myself, a lot of money, and maybe even more importantly, avoided the damage of losing your stuff.
Yeah, I love nothing more than to run into people that I haven't seen in years, and they come up to me, and they're just like, I need you to know how much of a difference your dad has made in my family's life, and they sort of go through, and I have a very similar story. I moved back in 04 from New York City. This is a struggling actor. Mom was dealing with sickness. And for some reason, I just knew it was time to come home. My body fell apart. So the career that I was doing in New York was over and I didn't even know it. And I got really lucky. And I had, if you've never heard it before, I was working for an architectural lighting designer in downtown LA and absolutely fell in love with the construction industry, urban design, urban development. I was thinking about going back to school for urban development, actually. And I had the opportunity to go back to a Wall Street company, and I was in my third and final interview, but it was a surprise interview that took a very strange turn because it was going to be somebody that wasn't my boss. It was just somebody who wanted to call me in to let me know that she was really the boss and not to cross her. And I was complaining to you. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be an absolute nightmare. What did I just sign on for? And that was right before you decided working on the California crash, and you said, come work for me. I was like, let's do it. And
yeah.
It's been such a fun ride. So this is going on my 12th year with the Norris Group.
Best moment for me in the creating of these reports is in the audience, as the audience was coming in for the California crash, and we had created a very rudimentary document for California comeback, a little better document for countdown, but you got a hold of the crash. And when people opened that document, it was fun because there were audible gasps that, oh my gosh, look at this thing. And so that's been true ever since. So yeah, it's been, thank you for helping me create what I consider a pretty cool legacy of a journey of saying, this is what's next.
Very cool. Yeah, it's just been such a fun ride. Well, we have a lot to cover today, so maybe we can dig in. And thanks, everyone, for joining us live. And so sorry for those who just got blocked. It'll be available afterwards. So
yeah, it'll be recorded. We're going to do two segments, too, today. We're going to do a review of the newsletter, and then in the second segment, we're going to take a look at the table of contents for the new report. I know I've done my job when I'm trying to do a report and the ending surprises me. That's a fun ending for me, and that really happened this time. So the process when you're doing a study of what's next goes, first thing is you do all of your research. It even means that you eliminate many chapters that you have written on before. So it's like an NCAA tournament for me. I lay out the 60 or 70 folders on reports, on chapters that I've done in different reports, and then I go through a contest to see which 20 survive the cut, because it's about all I can do in a day. And so the next segment, we'll talk about the 20 that survived the cut and why this time they were maybe more significant than the ones that didn't make it. So you do all this research, and then right at the end, you draw the conclusions. And the process is actually very similar as doing an appraisal on a property. One of the big mistakes investors make is they want a number to be true. So they buy a property and they look for the highest comp, and it doesn't matter if it's 1,000 square foot smaller, 50 years older, in a bad area. It's just the number they want to reach. And if you do reports that way, you'll find the information that'll prove something, but it won't be the right thing. So you can know that every time that I've done these, I've literally cleaned the slate. I challenge every conclusion I've ever made. And then I do new research. I've been researching this for 6 months, and I didn't write the final chapter until within 10 days ago. And this final chapter is the largest final chapter we've ever had. It comprises nearly a quarter of the book. And the reason that is there's a process that I have to take you through to show you the reasoning and the rationale of why the conclusion this time is different than any conclusion we've had in the last 40 years. And so for me, that was really important. So it projects out 10 years from now, probably means I won't be doing another report during the next 10 years in California. It doesn't mean that I won't take a look at another area to see if I can figure it out. And I won't assume that the other area is all at all similar to California. So I still may have my fun looking at another state. In this quarter's newsletter, one of the things that we did is we snuck in a chapter that I didn't think I would have enough time to cover during the seminar day. And some of these five topics that we're going to cover right now really deserve a chapter of their own. Unfortunately, I'm not knowledgeable enough to do that chapter, and I realized that. And when I realized that, I thought it would be fairer just to put a title. So the wild card chapter literally just has 10 subject titles, and we'll cover half of them in this newsletter, and maybe in another newsletter we'll do the other half. But these are subjects that could affect California real estate, but aren't connected to real estate world. Sometimes they're not even in our country, but we have to look outside that sometimes and say, okay, if this goes wrong or this area has a problem, it could affect what happens to California prices. And the first wild card we're going to talk about is China. And I was going to write an entire chapter on this subject, but I realized I couldn't do it justice. I wasn't familiar with it. And so I decided to be honest with myself. China is the second largest economy in the world. And so if they have any major problem, it'll be felt worldwide, affect the economy of a lot of areas, not just their own. Since the financial crisis, and there's a chart showing China's national debt, it's exploded from 158% of GDP to 282%. And a lot of that debt is due to a very aggressive expansion of real estate. About 40 to 45% of China's debt is connected to real estate. And the personal debt owned by people that own real estate has gone from $500 billion to $1.8 trillion in 7 years. So it's gone up by over three times. The day I realized I wasn't really going to be capable of writing a chapter on China, I watched a half-hour segment, a documentary on ghost cities of China. And when I watched that, I realized, okay, I have really no idea how to comprehend what this means. What China has done is they built cities in their entirety that are going to be occupied, hopefully, within the next 20 years. So think about, and this isn't a city like the city of Riverside, for instance. It looks more like Manhattan. And they've got a lot of these cities that have been pre-built. High-rise condos going for $500,000. Median income of the area, $4,000 a year. When I heard that statement, I just realized I have no idea how to comprehend what the thinking was behind that and how much value is really in that high-rise condo. How do you have a $500,000 condo when you have $4,000 median income? I'd like to give that one to Rick Solis. Please appraise this condo. Tell me what it's worth, since it can't produce a cash flow past probably $1,000 a year. So China's built these cities in advance. And if you think about how many they've done, a lot of their GDP growth has been attached to this type of project. 30% of their GDP approximately is connected to real estate. And what if you don't need any future cities going out 20 years and you're having trouble filling the ones? So I don't know what's going to happen to their economy, but it feels uncomfortable. Most of those buildings are owned by people that are speculative people that own with the intent of making a profit. And the debt attached to it, I just don't know how to calculate that. If I was a hard money lender in China and somebody came to me and said, I just paid $500,000 for this condo, and I took a look at the likely income from rental, I wouldn't know how to make a loan for them. And so I don't know how to value what they've got. The other thing is there's a lot of money that's leaving China. So you've got people with money. And there was a talk I did in LA, and there was a guy that was a Chinese citizen there, very helpful, very knowledgeable, connected to investments. And he was explaining some of the things. There's people with wealth are very uncomfortable keeping it there. They're afraid that the rules of engagement could change, that they may not be able to sell their asset. They may not be able to get money out of the country. And so you're seeing money come out of China. And it's because the people that have the money are concerned. The other thing that really bothered me, again, another documentary, was I was watching a healthcare documentary, and their system has a lot of problems. China's definitely an area that has grown and has tremendous wealth, but you have a lot of people that are living in very rural settings with no income. And their healthcare system is basically a pay-as-you-go system. So you go in there, you get a number, you actually pay for the number, you wait for your turn. The doctor sees approximately 100 people a day. So however many minutes that gives you, that's how many minutes you've got. If you need a procedure, you have to pay for it usually up front. And then if insurance kicks in and rebates you something, that's what happens. And there was this one particular man that had gone in there with tremendous pain in his leg. And it turned out he had a blood clot. And he had about 10 days to live, they said. The surgery would cost $50,000. He was a farmer that made $4,000 a year. And somehow he had managed to save 30 grand. And he was, you know, this was for his entire life. And so he couldn't have the surgery. So he went home and they gave him painkillers so he would be not miserable until he died. And he decided he would take matters into his own hand, and he cuts his leg off with a hacksaw. The local people heard about that, and there became a problem. And so the government came in and actually offered to, his other leg got infected, so they offered to take his other leg off for free. And that's what we saw, was this guy talking in a wheelchair. So I don't really know how to appraise China's issues going forward. I can just say that I think there's going to be some uncomfortable times for them. They're a great growth story, but for many people who still live in the $4,000 a year income world, a life's been very different. So China could have a lot of challenges. And if they do, because of their size, it's going to affect the world economy. The second surprise or wild card, thank you, Aaron, is the Eurozone deflation or breakup. So you have Brexit that's coming along, and there's a chart that shows what that means to the economy. There's a five-year projection there where the EU, the European Union, loses GDP for the next from 2018 to 2023, and even a bigger piece of loss for the United Kingdom. So that's a recession in the EU for 5 years, just with that event happening. And the EU's economy is maybe a little bigger than the United States if you take a look at the whole. They haven't been growing at a tremendous rate up until now. They came off of a recession, and now we're probably headed back there. The other big wild card for the Eurozone is the upcoming elections. You've got major elections in Italy, France, and Germany, and depending on how those elections go, you could have a very different looking Eurozone after those elections in 2017. I'm going to read part of the newsletter. It's a Reuters article, November 16th, 2016. Elections in France, Germany, and Netherlands next year, as well as next month's Italian constitutional referendum, are flashpoints that could ignite brewing political discontent across the continent. These are among the biggest risks for 2017, and I'll let you finish reading that, but that's an important part of what's next for that large group of countries that are joined together. And there's another article that from the John Malden's newsletter, and it's from a Financial Times columnist, Wolfgang Munchau, I guess. And I'll just read part of this, and this is another warning. One day, Italy will be led by a party in favor of withdrawal from the euro. When that happens, euro exit would turn into a self-fulfilling prophecy. There would be run on Italy's banks and its government bonds. And then at the very end of that, it says, the latter would imply the biggest default in history. The German banking system would be in danger of collapsing. Europe's biggest economy would lose all of its competitiveness gained so painstakingly accumulated over the past 15 years. So we have to keep an eye on what's going on over there for 2017, because it could spill over into the world economy and become a big problem for the U.S. and the growth. The next topic is oil disruption. This is an interesting topic. We have a president that has decided to get aggressive with the United States' capacity maybe to be oil independent. Just signed today legislation for the Keystone and Dakota Access Pipelines. There's a chart in the newsletter that shows the percentage of GDP that oil is responsible for. And it is so lopsided, it's scary. In Grand Junction, Colorado, I made an investment there because oil shale went bad in Grand Junction, and you had a city that was 50% vacant for maybe 5 to 6 years. You have countries that have oil be a very large percentage of their GDP. And if they're unable to continue producing oil at a profit, or their supply isn't needed by the United States, that's going to be a really big problem for their economy. They're very unstable as it is. And there's an article that I quoted there, and it just talks about that this is a very unstable region, and it doesn't need any help to have become more unstable, but that's probably going to occur. The other thing that could really affect this is a chapter that Aaron is going to be covering in the next in the report, and it has to do with just the progression of the electric car and solar power and how that could disrupt an industry that we think is just irreplaceable at the moment, but it might become less and less necessary. So that's a big deal, taking a look at oil and this area that can be very volatile as it is. If it has a real problem with oil, look at the red. That's the part of the economy, I think, that's oil connected.
Tan.
Okay, so tan. So it varies. I mean, you have it from, say, 25% to sometimes 60, 70%. At any rate, even if it's 25%, if you have a real problem in that area, you have a real problem with unemployment, and you have a lot of problems with your society in an area that doesn't need any help with that. So that's a wild card that I will take a look at and see if it's going to be disruptive, if it's going to be violent, and if that's going to visit us somehow. Another wild card is the tax law changes. So we have a president that's definitely going to change the tax laws. You're going to have what's probably going to emerge is a much larger standard deduction. So you're going to get about a $30,000 standard deduction, which is approaching triple what it is right now. It will mean that 60% of the people that file long form will no longer need to file long form. And that will be one of the reasons why it'd be so easy to say, we're not going to allow for interest payments to be deductible off of your income tax anymore, because it will hurt so few people. So I really expect that to happen, and it'll probably be virtually harmless for the next cycle if interest rates stay low. It'll hurt when interest rates go back up, but I think that's coming. It's probably another law change that could happen is you could have a change in the $500,000 IRS 121 law that says you can make $500,000 on a sale of your residence every 2 years. That one always kind of cracked me up, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I'm excited about that it being there. I took advantage of it once, but it wouldn't surprise me for that to go. Lastly, the healthcare laws, they're about to change, but we have to be really careful that we don't say, okay, well, everybody with a pre-existing condition or people that are too poor to pay for coverage are left out. So it's going to be a challenge. This is not going to be an easy turnaround, but the increases that we see by this map of Obamacare, there's been a lot of increases in rates, and this system isn't working, so we have to figure out what's going to work. The truth is 10% of our population, and there's a chart that shows that, 10% of our population accounts for 66% of healthcare expenditures, and 50% of our people account for 3%. So it's definitely lopsided. One of the reasons it's lopsided is you have an aging population. So you have charts that show how different the cost is per capita, an annual expense. So you get over 85, I mean, you're spending a ton on healthcare, and it's basically halved between every 20 years. It basically, if you go the other way, it basically doubles as you go and get older and older. So that's an inevitability. We're going to have an aging population, and we're going to progressively get to live longer. So this healthcare issue is a big deal. And the other thing that I'm kind of surprised at, that it doesn't affect your ability to get a home loan, because all of us have experienced how expensive it is to get insurance, and the deductibles are growing, but it's not an equation that comes into play when you get a home loan, and eventually it may. So that could impact real estate as well. If you look at the county by county, and I don't have to do this blow by blow, because I do want to spend a little time on the other chapter. There's just no significant changes that happen quarterly for California. You have areas that are in the same boat they were the quarter before. You have some areas that are pushing their limits.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.